Hello and welcome to Growing Up B2B. I'm Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. For over 60 years, and now across two generations, we've been helping B2B companies achieve next-level growth through brand distinction, quality lead generation, and sales enablement. Growing Up B2B was created for family business leaders who are passionate about growth, legacy, and making a lasting impact. Whether it's a multi-generational legacy or multiple family members working together, there's something truly magical about blending business with family. And we want to celebrate that right here on Growing Up B2B. So be sure to stick around to the end of the show and find out how you can be our next guest. Okay, let's get into it. Hello and welcome to another episode of Growing Up B2B. I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. Today, we're diving into a story that's all about legacy, reinvention, the power of thinking like entrepreneurs, even inside a family business. Susan Michael founded Glen Eagle Advisors in 2002 with a clear mission, help families and business owners build wealth with purpose. What she may not have expected was that two of her four children, Rob and Carol Ann Fernandez, would step in not just to join the firm, but to bring their own vision for what it would become. Today, Rob serves as president and chief investment officer, and Carol Ann as chief operating officer, overseeing operations and 401k planning. While Caroline isn't joining us today, we're thrilled to welcome Susan and Rob to talk about their journey as a leadership team and how they're building Glen Eagle's next chapter together. So Susan and Rob, welcome to Growing Up B2B.
Thanks, glad to be here.
Thanks.
Awesome. Susan, let's start at the beginning. What inspired you to start Glen Eagle Advisors back in 2002?
Actually, we're one of the few women-owned financial firms, and I wish I could tell you I loved finance, but I was actually an education major and was teaching, but we were living in Europe at the time and then had just moved back, and my husband was away all the time, and I had two small children and wanted to get out of the house. And so I basically took a course for like several nights, six weeks, and the advisor called, and at the time, and back in 02, was mostly all male, very few women were in the industry. And he called and said, this might be a little technical. You might want to put your husband on the phone. And I had gone to an all-women's college and thought, why would he say that to me? But it was actually the biggest gift I was ever given, because it was like an aha moment. I think that as entrepreneurs, we don't pause enough to hear those aha moments. And I thought, this is an opportunity. And I started studying, taking exams, and entered the field. We began after several years of being in a broker, what they called us brokers back then, but I actually own my own broker dealer, still do, and RIA. So I'm a dual model. And it's just grown from my kitchen table. And I always say I had four children as it grew with them. They belong, the board of directors, they all recommend business owners have. I had it. At night, I would be talking a mile a minute to my husband. He'd be talking. It was a technology company. So we had very different companies, but they would chime in and give advice. So I really actually think that they feel like the success of the firm was because of the kitchen table conversations at dinner. But that's how we started. And today we have really grown far exceeding that. We have a, because of the broker dealer and the RIA, we are humming, and now we're bringing into a third business into it, which is what we call a fintech, a technology financial company. So that's who we are.
Yep. Wow. So safe to say, Rob, you were at those dinner table discussions at a fairly young age.
Yes. Yeah, I was the youngest, though. I don't know how coherent my input was at the time.
But a question that I often ask, what was your first kind of acknowledgement? Like, how old were you when you said, oh, this is what my mom's up to. This is what she's doing for a living. Like, how old were you when you started to connect the dots and start to see what she was up to?
I don't know. There's a one moment. I think I like progressed. And I think this was, I was the youngest, like I mentioned. So I was being put in the car kind of constantly, either going to soccer games or my siblings' events. And then similarly, my mom would bring me into the office when she ultimately grew and had an office for the company. So I'd be outside and I'd be pretending shredding to play office or shredding or something else. In fact, there's a story where I thought it was a play phone and I dialed 911 and it was not a play phone. That was not an enjoyable experience for her coming out of a meeting to the police. But I think I was just always in the business, tangentially part of it. And then I think I really started to think about it more seriously, or at least acknowledge what it was, when I was in high school. And then very much again, when I started my own career later on.
So was it somewhat influential, would you say, in terms of the path you took in your education? Were you, but just by virtue of being exposed to that, and was that, did that have any bearing on your course coming into college years and whatnot?
Yeah, I don't think I came in, even after college, I don't think my plan was to join the business. But I think it was influential just in terms of kind of personality traits and knowledge. And I'd say this is not only my mom, also my late father and dad. He was in business, and so was my mom, running two companies. So I think as a little kid, you get to see both the ups and the downs of being an entrepreneur. And I think there are very much some good parts and bad parts. And I think that I got to see that, which I think a lot of people don't. And I think that at least allowed me to make a more informed decision than a lot of people otherwise would.
For sure.
It was never really a plan that they would come in. After college, Rob went investment banking and then back to Wharton. And after Wharton, he actually was becoming an entrepreneur, and he didn't realize it, I think. And they came, he and Carol, and asked to come back into the company because when you're an investment banker working those hours, his comment was, "Mom, if I work as hard at my own thing, it could be my own. And I really want my own. I'm willing to not be a private equity guy and take the big payoff now. I want something. I want the dream. I want to build something." And I wish I could say I embraced him and was an empowering mother. I said, "No, you're not coming back." And I thought in my mind, all those tuitions, all those Ivy League schools, what am I doing? You go out and this is your time to soar. And I think as entrepreneurs, we never think of our businesses as that powerful. But they both came and they waited a while, came back with another plan. And they walked in and they didn't say, "We want to come work for the firm." They said, "We would love the foundation of what you built, but now we want to take it greater and further." And I think through that conversation, as I listened to this, they actually had a business plan. They were moving. They were going. I actually thought, gosh, I hope I have a job in a year. But the gift was, I thought to myself, my gosh, every book tells you replace yourself with better. And I really feel like that's what I was going to do. And I did. So that's how we got started. But really, initially, it wasn't, "Oh, that's great, you want to come into business." It was no. And they really had to make proposals and sell themselves. And I agreed. And here we are. How many years later?
Yeah.
So that's pretty remarkable. You don't hear that too often. In fact, on this show, and we've just crested, I think, 35 episodes, I've never heard that. So, Rob, talk about that for a moment. So you and Carol Ann had a sort of a sidebar and said, "We've got a vision for what this can be." How did that play out? Tell me a little bit.
Yeah, so Susan said, I was doing investment banking in New York, and I think it was probably the best decision just from a experience and learning perspective, but I don't think I was enjoying my life as much as I otherwise would want to. And I said, okay, this is not the profession I want to be in, although it's been a great platform to jump off of. So then at the time, I was starting to have some conversations with my mom and my dad about the vision of what I saw wealth management. And I was dating now my wife and hanging out with a lot of our mutual friends and realizing that the wealth management industry really was missing some core competencies that the next generation would want in 20, 30 years. So it was just having those general conversations. Was fortunate enough to chase my now wife down to Philadelphia and go to Wharton. And when I was there, that's really when I started building kind of a third business to see if it would work. And that's when my sister, Carol Ann, who was in the capital markets group at M&T Bank, we started having conversations. And actually I joined and then went to grad school. And then she joined the firm when I was in grad school. So we both came in at similar timing. So it just worked out well that we could tag team and start to grow the business with Susan's blessing so that we could position it for the next 20, 30, 40 years. And hopefully, fingers crossed, the next generation, but time will tell.
Well, actually, there's a huge wealth gap in the United States. And so they say they saw a niche and they decided they were going to build a platform for them. That's where this, what we call Alula, came about.
So initially you said no, Susan. What was it that got you to say yes the second time around when they came back with a proposed vision for the future?
I think both of the passion. I saw entrepreneurs, and I always call them entrepreneurs because they're in a firm building it, but they weren't asking just to come in for a job. They were giving up. I think how do we turn that down? Like, they could have so easily gone out, all their peers, and made really four or five times the amount that they were going to take home, but it was a dream. And I saw the energy and the passion. The second time around, the amount of hours they put into building a real, what they say, "What's your business plan?" They weren't treating me like a mom. They weren't treating me like this is the family business. They came in ready. And every tough question we had, they could answer. And to me, that they were ready. I really felt like, wow, they're going to go. They're here. Carol was doing mathematical modeling. She was business and finance. And so together, they're a team. They are a real team. And they're very different, but they complement each other, I think, a lot on their skills. So that's why. And they're good salesmen. I could see Rob's sales ability. They sold me. So I,
that's
but, great. But they didn't add, they actually were talked a lot about of what they could grow, how they could grow it, even right down to the finances. They had it down to finance. If I would fund, and that would be my role. My role would be actually to help fund it, but their role would be the intellectual capital of building it. Mm-hmm. So that's, it was a great threesome. So we did it.
Awesome. Awesome. Oh, you mentioned a term, and that's kind of, that came up, I think, when we were having our pre-interview discussion, which is this idea of entrepreneurship. And that's come up a few times. What does that mean? Is it a term that's utilized within the Glen Eagle kind of team? What does that mean? And how does that mindset show up at Glen Eagle Advisors?
It is, I think, a founder, right? When you begin a firm, you worry about making payroll, who the next hire is going to be, how you're going to do that. And I think that's where I came from. When they came in, there was a solid financial platform, but the vision of what is out there 20 years from now, the vision of not how am I going to build this to sell it or who's going to take it over. So often in our industry, you hear people say, oh, don't worry, I'll be here. I'm going to die at my desk. And I always think that's great for you as the entrepreneur, but what about the employees and what about the clients? And so I think I'll let you take it over from there, Rob. But Rob and Carol came in with, we're not having to start the business like at our kitchen table as I did. We have a lot of that benefit. On the other hand, there's a huge ability now to leverage it.
Yeah. I mean, I think some of this is also just phrasing and wording. And I think what you really are trying to get to is, how does that manifest itself in the culture and the outlook of the company? And I always think about this, and there's a bit of an irony because we are professionals and we employ a lot of people to look at the public markets and do portfolio management. But yeah, I think one of the things or the key advantages of being a family firm is that you can have a long viewpoint or a longer perspective in terms of your goals. And I think that what this really means, if you look at the average company, and even I'd say, unfortunately, a lot of family businesses, they're very short-term oriented. They're not looking to innovate because they're afraid it's going to cannibalize their current business model or the current structure. And I think what Susan, to her credit, and then really now Carol Ann and I and Susan together have been able to create is this culture that it's okay to take some risks. It's okay to innovate, even at the expense of today, as long as you're working towards a better tomorrow so that you position yourself to be more relevant in the future than you are at present, right?
And I think it gives our employees a lot of energy. They are really engaged in it because they can bring ideas, not worried. And some things have worked and some things haven't, but actually we've grown a lot from employee ideas.
That's great. That's great. So how many years now has it been, Rob, since you and Carol Ann joined?
I joined in 2016 and I think Carol Ann was 2017.
Okay. Okay. So you came to the table with a vision then. Talk a little bit about how has that vision evolved over the years? Are you essentially following to plan or has things evolved now that you've settled in and years have passed and you're very much part of the firm and part
yeah,
of
the Yeah, I always like the phrasing, it was an overnight success in 10 years or something. So I think we might have subscribed to that, but no, I think the general framework, I think we are following. Our view was that the wealth management industry as a whole was going through a transformational segmentation. So essentially, people who had ultra high net worth assets would get more of a white glove personalized service. And then people who were not in that category, but were growing their wealth or in a lower tier would have a more automated process, but still wanted some human interaction. So we didn't subscribe to the traditional robo-advisor, Robinhood, trade it yourself type approach. So it was somewhere in the mix. And the problem with the industry and many firms is that they're caught in that no man's land, that middle land where they weren't quite giving white glove service, but they also weren't automating or innovating fast enough. And our view was we need to segment the business so that we can really automate things like the growing professionals or 401ks or things where cost matters a lot to people and you can still get a very good return. But at the same time, we need to cater white glove service for people like business owners who do need unique strategies and otherwise can't just put together one financial plan, call it quits and not do anything else, right? So really what we've been doing and Susan, Carol Ann, and I as a team have been focusing on is how do we segment appropriately so that we're servicing both models, like I said, so that in 20, 30 years we're positioned.
It's funny, the story to go with that is And I think a lot of businesses will say this, you can have the best planning and strategy, and then you just fall into it because of things that happen. And both Rob and Carol happened to marry doctors, and they were asked to go to UPenn to just educate. And when they went, there were a lot of advisory firms like myself there, but they weren't going to talk to them until they had $1 million. And here they have all these MD, PhDs or these residents, and they've gone through and they're all going to make six figures now. But the problem is they also have a huge amount of debt. So they need advisors. They're having kids. They need to save for college, but they didn't have anybody to talk to. How do we fall into it? We saw a niche and a need. And I think if you, doesn't matter what industry you're in, that's the same thing as when you're looking for what is it that we can service at a cost. And so when they were going in, they had this platform that they could use, call an advisor, talk to an advisor, and they were really getting serviced without. So it's, I think when you talk about AI and technology, I think that's in all industries, it's where is that? It doesn't matter what field you're in, where can you meet a need?
I also feel like it, for Caroline and I personally, we had, you know, I had come from investment. I can't speak for Carol because I don't know as much about the capital market side of it, but I definitely felt like I was mostly being used by boards to get an advisory role, but they were going to do what they wanted to do anyway. And I felt like this was a position where I came into Glen Eagle and said, wow, I can really help people on a very personal level, whether in their business as a mid-sized business owner or their family or their assets. But building Alula also met a existing goal of mine, which was to address something that I thought was a problem, which is a massive growing wealth inequality. In part, there's lots of reasons, so I'm not solving it in one issue, but one of them is just the lack of exposure to the markets that most Americans should have but don't have for lack of knowledge or know-how.
When I started the firm, it's funny because they're taking it one way. When I way back in 2002 when I started it, women weren't in the field, and I remember marketers from New York coming in, and I said to them, I want to be Faith Family Firm in that order, because Faith was something better than ourselves, like giving back, as Rob's still doing the mission of Alula. What is it we can give back? Because Alula is not a big moneymaker. It's really a give back, but we feel good about it. And family, because family had to be center and core to me when you're trying to build a firm and you have four children.
Yeah.
And the last one was firm. And my view was if those first two weren't healthy, then the firm would never grow or be healthy. And it had to be in that order. And I think that when we're making decisions, that we're still making decisions on that platform and that core. And so even though long after I leave, that's what I would want, is that the firm would make those decisions with that core being. And I think Rob and Carol have done that. They've built technology and really very proactive type of investments through that.
That's a very powerful point, because I think a lot of companies, a lot of family governed companies, probably have that model upside down. Based on what you said, it's the company first, right?
Yeah.
And then the family, then faith falls somewhere in the cracks below or somewhere. For those that abide by that belief, what might you offer them to get them to flip the switch or flip the script or change that perspective? What is that given to you, Susan, would you say, that having that mindset?
I think it helps us with every decision. So right down to hiring, who we hire in the firm, how we execute what Rob's building. I think that we do traction, and that's what we begin with each meeting. This is our core. And people are really open to saying, how is it affecting us? What can we do? And when we really come down to the three of us, Carol, Rob, and I, making a decision, we'll say, where does that fit with our core? And I think that sometimes they say, make the decision with your heart versus what the book says or what everybody's telling you to do. And very rarely in the many years I've been in the business have I regretted making a decision that way.
Excellent.
And now I have to let them go. And also sometimes I'm like a deer in a headlight, but you know what? It's a trust. And I think that we've done well that way. Just letting Carol and Rob take it to the next level and go. And I'm not in the weeds anymore. Which is a beautiful thing.
Nice. So in your practice, you're obviously a family governed business. And are there any client among your clientele that are also family governed businesses?
Lots, yeah.
A lot.
I was not going to say that. Yeah. So does it give you an advantage, a perspective being a family business when you're dealing with other family businesses? And if so, how does it show up?
I think it 100% it helps, because the idea of this is the firm and then this is the family, they're all entwined. The fact that Rob always talks about, right, around the way we all talk around Thanksgiving table versus work.
Mm-hmm.
That's a juggling act. We have to be really cognizant of the fact that not all my children are in the business and they will not be taking the business over. But there's a peace of mind in that because there's a transparency and we've talked about it. There's no unknowns. I think transparency is key, don't you, Rob?
Yeah, and I think it gives us more of a push than another wealth management firm would otherwise have to find solutions to the problems that family businesses have, because it's relevant not only to our clients, but it's also relevant to us. And I think one of the ways it does manifest itself in an interesting way is, you know, I think we are very hyper-focused on making sure the firm grows and that we can get it to a level that is attractive enough for that next generation if they want to join, which is a big if. But I think what we've noticed is that some of the decisions you make outside of the business as a family and how you raise your kids also has a very big impact. And we've seen that both positively and negatively through clients and friends and our own anecdotal family experiences. I think that's really important to hone in. Okay, what are we doing to make sure that the next generation, the third generation, which is often the one that I most stereotypically doesn't carry on the legacy, is able to?
And as a third generation, don't you? So that's a rarity.
Well, I'm a second. I'm just a lowly second generation.
Yeah. They say third is hard. And I always say to Carol and Rob, I really have it easy. And the reason I think say that is because I raised them. I know their nuances and they know me. That saves a lot of effort and time. But for the third generation, they may be selecting from, say, some of their siblings or a cousin or a niece or nephew. And although it's family and there's similarities, there's differences. And so they'll have more of a challenge, I think, as second generation going to third than I did. And so a lot of times what we have in meeting when we're doing succession planning, which we're in the midst of doing right now, I'll say that you'll have to decide that because it's easy for me. I know really very intimately who I'm giving my firm to, but they're going to have much more of a strategy, I think, than I am. But it's good that they're starting out. They're already talking about what does that look like. So it's going to be a tougher job for them than me.
That's very healthy that you're having those conversations now. And how, just out of curiosity, a potential third generation has been referenced. How far off are we from that being a possibility in terms of age? Are they?
My wife is due in September. So we've got 18 years on the youngest and the oldest is just turned nine. So I think we've got a while.
They're nine and under, but there'll be a total of 10 as of September. So there's a lot to choose from.
Okay. Good time to be thinking about that now. And I certainly have encountered scenarios where those conversations happen too late. And when they happen too late, a lot of doors are closed and they can't be opened.
Yep.
And then it's more of a fire sale or a doing things maybe out of distress as opposed to out of a proactive, planned, orderly way. So whatever may come of it, the fact that you're thinking about it now, that's really wonderful. That's really good. For a moment, I want to go back in time. It's around 2016, 2017. Rob, when you and Carol Ann were just, the three of you were coming together. Were there any, and if there were, if you could think of one, an early moment that kind of tested your ability to work together, that really tested the theory that you had? And the theory was, hey, I think the three of us can build something remarkable. So was there anything that happened in that early period that said, wow, okay, this is our first real test, our first real challenge, our first real opportunity to see what the three of us can be against some adversary, some question, some issue that came up? So taking you back there, anything that comes to mind?
In 2020, we were in COVID, in the middle of COVID. So of course the business, and we were an essential business. So we were really working very hard because we had a trading platform. But my husband, who had a separate business, passed away suddenly. We had a very structured transition plan. And that had to be changed quickly because I had to assume responsibility on his board. And I think Rob and Carol actually assumed a lot quicker than they normally would have. I think we had to really say, this is it, we're going full force. And so I think that was a difference for me. I was more dependent on them, I think, than I would have normally. So they had young wives and children, and they basically were working nonstop supporting me. So I think that was probably but it was in some ways a gift, but also how I was going to transition, because if something happened to me now, that was a big difference. And I think that people don't think about that you have to say, if I'm not here tomorrow, and I think that was an aha moment for us. If I'm not here tomorrow, what does this look like? Too many business owners I hear saying, yeah, we're talking about it, we're working through it. And I always say, no, it's too late. You have to have a plan, even the fact that the day after I lost John, if something had happened to me 2 weeks later, they would have a huge tax consequence on the firm. That's not okay. So those decisions had to be made right away on top of growing the business and building Alula. And I think that challenged each one of us. But what would you say?
No, that's I think that's a good one. It's 2020 was definitely a tough year.
Yeah, for sure. In fact, it reminds me of a previous, it was a brother, sister team. They were very much in the business, but their father passed unexpectedly. And they were entrenched enough to figure out what to do, but there was so much that they had to figure out, so much left unsaid that they had to, where they had to fill in the blanks. And it was like a year, probably a year plus of doing that, just to, because that while they were there and they were in place and that was great. And that helped the continuity of the business. There was so much that was, that they had to go figure out upon their dad's passing, as it was a sudden thing. And to that end, then, when you're advising, say, a family business and they say, yeah, we're working on that, or they sidestep that, do you ever press them a little bit, or do you ever challenge them a little bit on that, on some of those succession and continuity plans?
I don't think we press them, but I think we ask them key questions. You leave here, this office today, and something happens to you on the road. What would the tax consequences be of the firm to those left behind? How saleable is it if you haven't put some of these? And I think it's a motivation. And also, I think the one thing we really strongly recommend is that they understand the story, that people understand where they came from, where they are, versus I think too often we find with young children or young adults really that are with the family businesses, they see a very successful business at that time, but they don't see that the business wasn't always like that. So that's where third generation blow up, because they're living off the business versus building the business. And I think that I was gifted that Carol and Rob came in to build the business, not to benefit from it.
Yeah. And I think there's also the generation matters too, right? Like you could look at a younger generation coming in and just say there's a lack of work ethic, or there's a lack of alignment and values, even what the key relationships are. They take it for granted of where those came from, who built those, and what they mean. Similarly, I think there's simple questions like, for an exiting generation or someone handing off, like, what is your purpose now that the business isn't your sole priority? I think that's a question that, it's not just second or third generation family business owners, but I think it weighs even heavier on them, is it's not something they always think about, because the business is almost like another child to them. And it's really hard to say, okay, now let me hand off to the next generation, but I don't have my full purpose figured out. And I think asking the questions to the younger generation and the older generation, to Susan's point, I don't think our purpose as advisors is to push them, because every family is unique and every family has values and priorities. And maybe they're not solving for the same thing that the next family is. But I think asking some key questions helps them kind of shape the conversation in a way that's helpful for themselves.
Nothing more gets them thinking about things that they really should be. Because I can't tell you how many ex-business owners who have successfully exited their business for very large sums of money go into a state of depression because they don't have that anymore. And they didn't think about what's next for me.
There's a lot of emotion that goes into it, as well as strategic and financial.
Yeah. Yeah. Good questions to ask, even if they don't readily have the answers. At least you get them thinking, and that's a good thing. And maybe it leads to better ends, I hope. As Rob and Caroline have stepped into these leadership roles and now very much cemented in those roles and evolving them, how has your role changed, Susan? Has it changed now that they've
absolutely. When you first start out in a business, I did the operations, I did the sales, but Carol, actually, I always, the joke is if I had to open an account, I probably wouldn't know how to open that account, because Carol has so many operations, a huge department, and she oversees that. And I think what I do with Carol is a lot of the financial planning, but we are together. And Rob and I do a lot of the sort of the investment part of it and the strategic part. But actually, I feel from the bottom of my heart, if something happened tomorrow that Rob and Carol, they wouldn't miss a beat. Unlike when John passed away, that has far ship sailed. And that's a beautiful thing that, you know. So now it's more growth. The excitement, I find my excitement on the growth and strategic planning of it, but not in the weeds anymore. And I shouldn't be, and I really don't want to be. But when it comes to finance, of course, I love investments. So that's a fun part to do with Rob. And I love the financial planning, as you talk about business owners. But I also think that's a gift I'm bringing, is when someone's sitting there trying to sell their firm, I've walked the walk. When the widow walks in, she may have a lot of money, but she doesn't know what to do. I've walked the walk. So I think that we always say we grace them with experience, but then Rob and Carol have the energy. And this is an interesting thing. Business owners think that they are the most important, often the CEO. We have that. We all have that feeling. But I think another aha moment was no one ever said to me, what happens if something happens to you? But after Rob and Carol came in with their wealth of knowledge and their background and they're in all the meetings, so many clients will say, I can't tell you how great this is because I don't have to worry. When I'm 80, you're going to be 50, Rob. And so it's what the clients don't say to you, but the feeling of, hey, this is a gift. And I think that business owners, whatever industry you're in, you're empowering your business by exposing and saying, here, this is the next. And they know something happened to me. Everyone knows Carol and Rob, and they've been an integral part of it. So that's a gift. And I think that's the gift we give. We reward ourselves and knowing our business, our legacy will go on because of empowerment of others.
Yeah. And I think that a lot of people take for granted the journey of just observation. So Rob, even as the youngest, you got to sit back and passively observe what your mom was doing and what she was up to and slowly start to say, oh, I'm putting pieces together. I'm getting understanding. I'm gaining knowledge. But having that progression play out in front of you is powerful because not everybody does.
Yeah.
I certainly took for granted what it was for me. I was collating press kits when I was 7 years old and doing things and tinkering with the business without really, it was fun. It was like a game.
Yeah.
And not really realizing that I'm slowly learning a business just by observation. So when I walked in, I'm like, wow, I know what to do.
Yeah. I started in the dinosaur age and we always left because now everything's computerized. But back in the day, we used to get piles of statements and you had to file them for the FINRA inspections and they would be in the conference room. And I always say my kids learned to alphabetize before anybody else in school because they would put all the A's in a book, right? And it was like, that's the kind of thing they didn't know any different. That's what you did. And
for the record, we no longer have 7 to 11 year olds filing for us. So.
But it was good for the budget.
There you go. Let's talk about Rob. I want a question for you. So you came into the firm and you've now seen the three of you in action. What's something that Susan does as a leader that's shaped how you view and approach leadership? What's a character that she brings that you say, wow, that's admirable. That's something I'm going to follow. That's something I'm going to carry forward always, that the firm will always carry forward. Maybe some property of hers that you really abide by.
Yeah, it's interesting. Susan mentioned it earlier on the tenets of the firm and the culture of it. And I think I'd probably lean into that because I came out of Morgan Stanley and I remember having this conversation where I came in and had some like low hanging fruit of changes I wanted to make, but I very much wanted to shy away from the traditional local family feel of a firm towards a more traditional Wall Street, high growth, high power firm. Because that's where I came from. That was my knowledge base. And I'd say the longer I've been in it, and as I think about the legacy of the firm, I think one piece Susan's kind of shown is that she has formed relationships first and foremost, most on a personal level. And the business, and you can tell even by talking to her, the business is always secondary, whether in the client relationship, the family relationship, or anything else. And I think I very much came into it from both an academic and a Wall Street presence that came in and said, okay, we don't need that. We can do this on a pure revenue, profit margin, growth, operational efficiency standpoint. And I think the thing that makes Carol Ann and I and Susan, I think, a good team is that we were able to, hopefully, and knock on wood, we keep growing. We'll see if this podcast looks good in 10 years or not. But but we were able to keep some of that segmentation, which wasn't all there, but also Susan was able to add the core of what the firm was to me and my leadership, which is don't forget about that personal side, because that's what people are really going to, especially in finance. We always joke, finance, people will tell you about all the ins and outs of their life before they tell you about their finances. So it's an incredibly personal thing. It's a real honor that they would select to work with you, but you have to take that seriously. And it can't all be numbers and profit margin and revenue. It needs to be something higher. There needs to be a bigger purpose, which I think Susan is very much the leader on.
Cool. And clearly there was a lot of time and a lot of work done to foundationally make this transition work. But as a look back, and I'll ask Susan, what's something that Rob brought to the table that maybe was unexpected? So there was what you expected, maybe what you didn't, something that surprised you positively, wow, that's cool, or something neat that he brought to the dynamic of the firm that
I always say that there's always certain things that you say, I wish I had. And for me, I graduated from college, army wife, started the business from the kitchen table, raised four kids. There was no time to go to graduate school. And I always thought, I wish I had gone to graduate school. But the business kept growing and it was great. And there was no time for that. Rob, after Yale, went investment banking and he went to Wharton. I didn't have that. And so when I think about what he brought, I really did. I always say I have an advanced degree, like a Wharton degree, but I call it the school hard knocks. And so I always tell them I have the school hard knocks, but I can't put that on anything. There were times I wanted to put those initials behind my name, but that was me. Now with Rob and Carol, with both MBAs and the big firms, I never worked for a big firm. I started and I grew as an entrepreneur. They're coming in with this wealth of knowledge that I did not have. So there's a real appreciation for that. And I'm a little in awe of that. On the other hand, as Rob alluded to, there's a whole other aspect to School of Hard Knocks and really being able, when that person's sitting across from you, to be related to exactly what they're going through. So I think the reason we're working as a team is I'm actually growing from them, but I do think in a lot of ways they're growing from me. And just what's important in life? Faith family firm. What order is that? And to have a great strategic plan, but then if you don't say, okay, now let's bring this into it. How does it fit? If it doesn't fit, let's start again. So I think that's why we're a good team.
That's awesome. And I think Rob, you and Caroline brought, whenever I'm meeting a family governed business for the first time and I'm meeting that second or third, or in fact, I recently just spoke with a seventh generation.
Wow.
Interesting.
Oh, for you.
That's the thing I look for is vision. Do they have a vision that they own? In fact, it doesn't even have to be a good vision. It just has to be their own. Yeah. And doing it a little bit better than mom or dad is not a vision. That's a kicking of the can down the road. A vision is something that they can own and hold dear to. And I don't care that I say, I don't care if it's a good one, because oftentimes I had a vision too. It's been refined. It's added color and dimension and more purpose and intent. And that happens over time. But the fact that you have one puts you 100 steps ahead of everyone else who doesn't, who's going to struggle, therefore, because until they find it. And the ones that find it, continue on. The ones that don't, I think there's the ones that get into trouble. So that's really a very healthy foundation that you're building there. So Glen Eagle right now, the fairly wide range of clients. You've got some individuals, you've got some business owners, you've got some families in the mix. What would you say most differentiates you in this greater landscape of financial advisory category? What would you say sets Glen Eagle apart?
For us, for me, there's very few. There's a lot of advisory firms and financial firms, but very few own a broker-dealer. We actually own a trading platform and very few women in the business. And we're still women-owned. And so we're a certified women-owned business. That Rob and Carol will carry that on. And Carol helps a little on that, right, Rob? But they're equal partners. And I think that brings a real uniqueness to the industry. But what would you think would be our unique?
Yeah, I would actually say I think it's our dual role, like I've referenced, as both owners, family members, and wealth managers. That's unique, right? And you can look at the most obvious, which is because we are business owners, we aren't selling products for a specific purpose or a higher entity. We're able to act independently. But I think what's on a deeper level we're able to do is we're able to cater solutions to families and business owners that other people can't, because we're experiencing it, we're living it. Even the way we structure, one of our highest growth areas of the business is 401ks. So even the way we structure the 401ks or we work with the business owners and their employees is different because we do that for ourselves and for all the other families of businesses. So I'd say if I think about the differentiating factors, in addition to our viewpoint on life, which I'm sure you've got a good sense of at this point, just from talking to Susan and myself, of being the anti-Wall Street feel and more of the family business owner feel. In addition to that is just our ability to cater solutions towards that demographic, because that's our demographic.
I think as business owners, there's a real understanding, because as we said, we walk the walk, that a lot of your time, effort, and net capital goes into that business. So a lot of the wealth is in that business. We always say, listen, you're very wealthy, you're just cash poor. And in our industry, they have a set thing where you have to have so much in this, you have to have so much in the bank account, you have to have so much. Sometimes as a business owner, it's there, it's just within the business. And so there's a unique way of almost educating them how they can begin to take it out of the business to benefit their retirement, and how they can
or their family
and leverage that. And it's hard when you walk into a big firm with an advisor who hasn't done that, doesn't know what a real business owner, it's important that they have to put that money back in to keep it going, or how the different options of maybe they want to sell, maybe they don't want to sell, maybe they just, there's so many, you have to go through those. And so I think that's our gift in that we're able to do that.
Cool. So looking to the future, what's going on right now, either in the firm, in the industry, or things you're looking at? What's getting the two of you excited right now? What's something that's exciting you in the horizon?
Well, I think in the industry as a whole, you're seeing these kind of mega trends, which is the average advisor is getting older. There's not a replacement force coming in. And simultaneously, you have a huge amount of consolidation with private equity firms coming into the industry. We look at all of these trends as both positive because it allows us to differentiate our differentiating factors, to use the word twice, which is not the private equity roll-up model, but also because there's more opportunities for us to service people. So if we're able to innovate, and what gets us excited is this mesh of kind of not losing the family close feel, but also innovating with technology. And this is what Susan was alluding to with bringing a fintech firm within our own existing infrastructure. We could really grow without losing the service model that Susan has worked so hard to found.
I think in a lot of industries, it becomes a lifestyle business, and we've chosen not to make it a lifestyle business. We've really chosen to take it and reinvest in it and take it to the next level. But if you're going to do that, then we have to envision, what does this industry, or any industry, but ours in particular, look like in 15 years from now and 20 years from now? And we really do believe it's going to be, this generation is going to look on their phone and they want to see their account. They want to see, but they also want a personal connection. So how are we leveraging that? And I think it's exciting. It's exciting doing it and being first to the ground floor, and it's fun.
That's awesome. So if you were to give one piece of advice to a family that's going through that generational transition, as you've successfully navigated, what would be the one big takeaway from your experience of making it happen and making it happen successfully?
I think I alluded to this before. I'll go and then I'll let you go. tell your story to your family. Talk to your family. They don't know your story. And I often tell, when I was a young advisor, I was asked to join an accountant and an estate lawyer. And it was going to be a meeting with a family business. And they had three sons and they were all fighting. And they were mad at their dad. He wanted one of them to take over the firm and they didn't want to take it over. And one of them wanted to take it over and they didn't want him to take it over. They wanted dad to sell it and give them the money. So the estate lawyer was talking estate technology tools, and the accountant was using tools. And I think I was probably naive and was thinking, why do they have me here? Why am I here? Of course, we always self-doubt ourselves. And then all of a sudden, the maternal part of me took over, the mother part of me, and the business owner part of me. The other two people next to me were not business owners. And I asked them to stop the meeting. And literally, my hands were shaking because I'm thinking, these two guys next to me are going to be like, what? Why do we ask her to come? And I said to them, can you just stop and tell us how you started the business and just tell me your story? And the father began to talk, and he actually began to cry. And he told the story about how he and his wife came to an inroad and they were going to lose the business. And he had to go to his wife's parents, his in-laws, and ask them for a loan. And they took out their entire retirement and gave it to him. And he said, my wife and I worked day and night because we were not going to let this, I was not going to not let them have a retirement. I had to get this money back to them. And now they were at this point where their kids were living, they were going on ski vacations and living a life, and they never knew it. And there was literally dead silence in the room. Now, I'm not going to say that at the end of the weekend, they were like saying, oh, dad, we'll work in the firm. But there was such a different tone. They were all of a sudden listening to each other. And since then, it was a great lesson for me, because now I'm going through it. And I always think, tell your story. Make sure they know where you came, and also your faith family firm. What order is it? And I went to help, and I left probably more educated in what I needed to do in my own world. That's what that's the advice I would give.
And what a powerful story. How about you, Rob? What would you say?
I think I would probably say, as a family, you should determine whether you're running a family business or you're a business family. And I know it's just a play on words, but I think the concept is important, because I don't think there's a right or wrong answer, but joining a family business that is a lifestyle or an avenue to get other outside means, or anyone in the family can work in it, is very different than saying we are a business family, which means, mm-hmm. yes, we all love each other. We're very close to each other. We see each other in holidays, but we need to make sure this business is vibrant in itself as a family, is a different concept than just saying, okay, the business is there to be used by the family. And I think getting alignment on that, and I don't think this is a generational thing, because we've seen older generations look at it as a family business, and the younger generations do look at it in the opposite way, and vice versa. So I don't think it's one generation's always pushing for one or the other, but I think you need to have alignment, because if you don't, it creates some real animosity for whichever party isn't getting the structure that they want. Yeah. I do think those subtleties are important.
They're hugely important. And there's a company I know now, I'm watching that play out, whereas the founder, very much a lifestyle business, the son coming in, it's very clear that he has a different agenda. And I'm sitting back and watching, but I'm like, there's a conversation that needs to be had there.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm not going to have it. But I hope they do. But yeah, and I think the fact that A, you had a vision, and B, you came forward with a plan, you and your sister to Susan, is huge. And that might be a great takeaway too for listeners. If there is a next generation that's got an interest, great. What's your plan? What are you going to do? Go figure one out and come back. And I think that's tremendous advice. Last question. If somebody wanted to learn more about the two of you or about Glen Eagle Advisors, what's the best way for them to connect?
Honestly, it's probably easiest, just for simplicity, to go to our website, which is Glen Eagle Advisors, and you can just hit the contact us, and it'll basically give you an info@alula.com or GlenEagleADV.com, and then we'll get it and we'll reach out. And we usually like to just set up meetings to learn about people before we actually do anything, but that's probably the easiest way.
Awesome. Awesome. Great. Susan, Rob, thank you so much for both sharing your story. This was tremendous to see how the business has evolved, all of the different nuances, many great takeaways for our listeners. Again, we've been speaking with Susan Michael, founder of Glen Eagle Advisors, and Rob Michael, president and chief investment officer. And I'm Ed D'Elia, and this is Growing Up B2B. Thanks so much for listening, and have a great day. Thank you both again for being with us. This was great.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
Awesome. Hey, thanks so much for tuning into Growing Up B2B. To explore more episodes and insights, visit podcast.delianet.com. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. Having worked with hundreds of family-led businesses across my career, and being a second-generation leader myself, I'm on a mission to help every family business I meet achieve next-level growth for their organization. So feel free also to connect with me on LinkedIn, and let's support each other. You can also find out more about my company at DeliaNet.com. Again, I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and thanks so much for joining us today. Take care.